Hi, I'm John Jenkins, managing editor of deallawyers.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of our Deal Lawyers Download podcast. Today, we're welcoming back Kip Wallen from SRS Aquium to discuss his firm's latest private targets deal study, which we've blogged about and posted on our website. Kip, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, John. It's great to be here.
Hey, I know you've been here before, and you're a familiar voice to many of our listeners, but if you could take a moment, just tell our listeners a little bit about your background and about SRS Aquium.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. So I'm an M&A attorney by background. I practiced for about 10 years. I mostly did kind of lower middle market sell side deals. I joined SRS Aquium about 6 years ago. And the last couple of years, it's really been my full-time job to put out what I hope are very helpful resources for those M&A practitioners who are working on deals currently. Resources like our recently released M&A deal term study, right, that we're going to talk about today. And I'm really, I'm able to do that within this cool thought leadership role at SRS Aquium because of the team I work with. So SRS Aquium, we're a professional services and technology provider, but really it's our main aim to try and make M&A deals more efficient. So we offer a virtual data room, we have an online payments platform, we offer escrow agent services, and also where we sort of pioneered and got our start as a company 17 years ago is as the professional post-closing shareholder representative. And it's in that role that we're really able to kind of pull out this and have unique access to all this data and insights about these M&A deal terms and the outcomes of some of these post-closing matters too. Just information you just really can't find anywhere else. So we've been publishing our study for over a decade, and I'm just delighted to be able to chat with you about it today, John.
Yeah, it's a great resource, and I know that many of our listeners are familiar with it. And let's jump right into it. Tell us a little bit about who were the buyers in private deals last year, and some of the trends in sizes and types of consideration that were paid in 2023.
Yeah, absolutely. So interesting in, so 2021, the M&A market, right, just to sort of set the historical context, 2021 was just that outlier year for M&A, right? Just, record-setting valuations, tremendous deal volume. And we just saw a lot of competition among buyers. So lots of activity from financial buyers, lots of activity from strategic buyers. In 2022, the market definitely took a bit of a step back. But we really saw more of those financial buyers being a little bit more active over the strategics. That shifted in 2023. And so even though deal volume continued to come down in 2023 overall, so it was a smaller pie, a bigger piece of that pie went to strategic buyers last year. And particularly the biggest shift we saw was sort of those US private buyers. We saw fewer of the sponsor-backed buyers, right, like a portfolio company of a PE firm making those bolt-on or add-on transactions last year. And more of the sort of non-PE backed or sort of independent private buyers being a little bit more active, as well as the large public strategics. So last year, more activity from the strategics, but for the last couple of years, there's just been such decreased competition and among buyers and just overall lower deal volume that it's been more of a buyer's market. So overall, a lot of the trends that we see in our data are generally buyer favorable.
As I get older and it gets later in the week, my mind doesn't work very well. And the question I should have asked you first, and we discussed, was really maybe the biggest issue of all, which was valuations and financial term. What did that look like last year, and how did it confirm to compare to prior year's deals?
It's a good thing to ask because it was definitely a huge factor in deal making last year. There continued to be this pretty tremendous downward pressure on valuations. So we started to see that in 2022, especially compared to that banner year in 2021. But even further, 2023 really was kind of a continuation or even maybe sort of an accentuation of a lot of those trends we saw going into the 2022 market. And so, we did start to see, a little bit more of the distressed or even distressed adjacent exits happening, and that can have an impact on deal terms. So, yeah, we're sort of in a unique situation where, sellers' memories aren't so short that they don't remember or, have that memory of what was happening in 2021 with those really high valuations. But you've got buyers sort of with their head in the kind of current reality of the market, just not willing, of course, to pay those high valuations. So those valuation gaps between kind of what the seller feels the company is worth versus what buyers are willing to pay, deal parties are getting creative and sort of how to bridge that gap.
Well, that kind of is a nice segue to the next question I had, which is, you know, when you read the survey, one of the things that really jumps out on you is the dramatic increase in earnouts last year. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the rise in the use of earnouts and how that influenced other deal terms.
Yeah, absolutely. That is probably the major headline from our study this year. Earnouts just like a 50% increase in the number of deals we saw with earnouts. So, you know, for the last few years prior to 2023, about 1 in 5 private target M&A deals generally would include an earnout, right? This is, of course, where you're pushing some of that consideration, making it contingent in the post-closing period. Last year, it was 1 in 3. So we went from 1 in 5 deals to 1 in 3 having an earnout. And that's just a tremendous pronounced uptick, you know, year over year, just, you know, a trend or, you know, a 1 year change that we just haven't seen be that dramatic in a while. And I think largely driven by the fact that there is that valuation gap, you know, or that understanding around valuations. It may also be driven a little bit by the fact that, you know, buyers, I think, are very mindful of their cash positions and want to preserve their cash as much as they can. So pushing out the consideration to a post-closing period, you know, might be attractive to buyers as well, because then, you know, they don't have to have as big of a cash outlay at closing.
That's right. Now, another thing that was very interesting was, you know, over the past decade, the rise of rep and warranty insurance has been one of the major stories in private company M&A. But it actually ticked down in terms of the number of the percentage of deals that included RWI last year. Can you share your thoughts on what might be driving that and whether that might be the beginning of a trend?
Yeah, I think, you know, so you're right. We, you know, RWI has really gained a lot of kind of a lot of traction, I would say, over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. We've just seen it more, you know, as a product. It's been around, right, for decades, really. But it's sort of kind of maturing and sort of finding its place in the market. And, you know, sort of our take on RWI is we do think it can be right for certain deals, but probably most deals out there, you know, deal parties want to think very carefully about, you know, how that RWI will actually play out post-closing and whether it meets the needs and intents of the party. And I think we're, you know, since it's been around now and gained prevalence these last, you know, half decade or so, we're getting more data around sort of how these things actually work, how they get negotiated into the agreements, but also, you know, do they pay out on their claims? We're starting to see some claims data come out of the insurers. And so I think the market's just reacting to having, you know, that better, more information about reps and warranties generally. In our experience as the shareholder rep, you know, it does seem to add a lot of time and complexity to post-closing claims. And, you know, some of that claims data is suggesting that maybe, you know, the usage of these policies is coming down. So I think buyers are just learning, you know, where these policies work and maybe where they don't work. And as a result, I think the market is just sort of, you know, finding the right level of utilization of these insurance products.
Yeah, and I know that just to give your firm another plug here, that you've got a very good resource on your website about RWI and some of the trends that you have seen this year. So I would refer folks to the SRS Equiem website, and we've actually blogged about that as well. So, but it is an interesting thing that I'm sure dealmakers are going to keep their eye on. One other thing that people have been keeping their eye on, particularly the Delaware Chancery Courts, actually had a couple of cases in the last year on purchase price adjustments and mechanisms and what they mean and all that type of stuff. And I know you addressed that in your survey as well. And what did you find out about 2023 purchase price adjustments?
Yeah, so this has been a really popular topic. We get lots of questions about purchase price adjustments, right? Sometimes called working capital adjustments. And you're right, like, you know, parties are paying closer attention to these, particularly on the sell side. And we're seeing a little bit more of, you know, some of these cases going before the Delaware court. And I think we'll continue to see that. There's actually a pretty interesting case. It's not a deal that we're engaged on, but it's been reported, the Save Mart case out of California, where the purchase price adjustment, the working capital adjustment, the way the buyer was proposing the calculations, it was like $109 million adjustment, right? Which completely wiped out, I think it was bigger than than what was paid to the sellers at closing. And so, you know, the arbitrator on that case agreed with the buyer, but of course the sellers are appealing that to the Delaware courts. So, you know, I think we'll continue to see some interesting findings from the court on this as deal parties just continuing to pay closer attention. I mean, they're pretty much, ubiquitous on private target M&A. Particularly, I mean, if you've got a financial buyer, pretty much guaranteed that you're going to have a purchase price adjustment mechanism on your deal. And so I think the major trends over the last, 5 or 8 years have really been around sellers are just paying closer attention to these adjustment mechanics. They're ensuring that these are now two-way mechanisms, meaning if there's a shortfall of working capital, the buyer gets the adjustment. But if there's a surplus of capital, 10 years ago, if there was a surplus, the buyer just kept it. But now a lot of these adjustments are structured as this two-way mechanism where the sellers actually could benefit from that surplus. And as a result, sellers are paying attention because they don't want to leave that money on the table. So we actually put out a dedicated study just on purchase price adjustments this past February that really drills down on not only how deal parties negotiating and highly customizing these provisions, but also how they play out post-closing and how important it is for sellers to, review those calculations being proposed by buyer, make sure that they feel comfortable. We end up pushing back on buyers' calculations about 28% of the time. So usually buyers' calculations are reasonable. After we review them, we get comfortable with that. But about 20% of the time we do push back, and that can be meaningful amounts, right? We can reduce the amount of a buyer favorable adjustment. I think on a median basis, it's like $178,000. So, depending on the size of the deal, that's real money for these sellers. So overall, the trends are deal parties are customizing these provisions. They're just paying closer attention because they're pretty much on every deal. Usually the dollar amounts are pretty small relative to the size of the deal, right? We're just talking about working capital adjustments. Maybe it's going to be 0.5% of transaction value. But sometimes they can become a very big deal, like that Save Mart case, where you end up with a $109 million adjustment, which is pretty massive.
Paying the buyer for the privilege of acquiring your company is something that I think will definitely get every seller's attention. So,
yeah. Absolutely.
Well, before we close, why don't we kick it? There's an awful lot in that survey, and we're just scratching the surface of it here today. But maybe take a step back and talk about kind of the big picture conclusions that dealmakers should take away from the survey results, and also kind of what you folks are seeing so far in 2024.
Of course, the crystal ball question. That's always the big question I get asked. But to start with the kind of key takeaways, I think there's kind of three main themes that the data is telling us this year. And the first is that, we're continuing to see that valuation gap, right? That misalignment on what the sellers think the target's worth versus what buyers are willing to pay. It's driving things like earnouts. Going to 1 in 3 deals, having an earnout is just a tremendous change in the deal terms. And also, just generally, I think deal parties have to get a little creative on some of these deals in order to get the parties comfortable and get across the finish line. The second theme is, the pace of deal making has just slowed, right? There's just not that sense of urgency, particularly compared to what we all felt in 2021. And that luxury of time is allowing the buyers to just do much more thorough due diligence. And that is definitely having an impact on indemnification terms. So seeing more carve outs to survival periods, carve outs to the caps, and particularly seeing just a ton of special escrows. So even on deals with that reps and warranties insurance, we're seeing lots of additional special escrows to cover or add additional security when the buyers see those yellow or red flags because of this robust due diligence they're doing. And then thirdly, there are some signs of some just distressed exits going on, or at least distressed adjacent exits. And so, we saw a little bit of an uptick in the number of deals with a management carve out. We saw a little bit higher number of asset deals. So, while there are some really great deals happening that are, structured really well with clean targets, there also are some of those kind of urgent or distressed exits happening as well. And for the current market, so that's always a good question. I wish I could tell everyone, exactly what's going to happen the next few quarters. I will say there are some very, we've been talking about green shoots and, these glimmers of hope. There's all this dry powder available from financial buyers. Target companies are running out of cash and it's expensive to raise capital or take on debt. So, all the ingredients are there for a just uptick in deal volume. And we've been sort of hearing that for, 18 months now. Oh, it's going to be next quarter. It's going to be Labor Day. It's going to be fourth quarter. Okay, no, it's going to be 2024. All right, the first quarter wasn't quite as busy as we thought. So far in the second quarter, though, things are looking up. Our own pipeline at SRS Aquium is really robust right now. We're seeing lots of deals come in every week, you know, week over week, we're seeing more and more deals. So I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to see this uptick in deal making, if not in the current quarter, the third quarter of this year. And then hopefully from there, it just takes off.
Well, it's great to close on a positive note, and that certainly is one. I'll keep my fingers crossed, as I know many of our listeners will as well. Just a reminder, we have included a link to SRS Aquium's private deal term study on the landing page for this podcast, and I'd encourage you to take a look because, as I suggested, there's a wealth of data there that we just really have scratched the surface on in our conversation today. Kip, thanks. I know you're very busy running around talking about this survey with various constituencies, so appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with us about it today. And I'd like to thank our listeners for listening and joining us today, because this concludes today's podcast.
Great. Thank you, John.
Thank you.